Good afternoon. My name is Phil Rosen. I'm your host, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this Middle East briefing. Before I introduce our speaker, Avigdor Lieberman, I want to take a moment to tell you about the Middle East Forum and its important work and encourage you, those of you who haven't yet joined the efforts, please do so. Under the direction of Daniel Pipes, who is one of the stars in my mind of the Jewish community today, the Middle East Forum works to define and promote American interests in the Middle East. It has consistently displayed an unparalleled grasp of key issues, whether exposing the threat posed by radical Islam, working for Palestinian acceptance of Israel, tough though that may be, urging the Bush administration to better manage its democracy efforts, thinking through strategies to contain the Iranian threat, or through its Campus Watch project, critiquing the extremist orthodoxy that dominates Middle East studies at North American universities. Through research, publishing, media work, and public education, including today's program, the forum energizes the public debate by addressing a wide range of issues and offering fresh and sound perspectives on policy. If you haven't done so, please add your name to the email sign-up sheet to receive the Middle East Forum's materials as they appear. Or you can go to the website, www.meforum.org, to sign up and read the work. And if you caught today's New York Sun, you caught Daniel's most recent article, which he publishes in the New York Sun and other papers on a regular basis. I ask that you please switch off all cell phones and pagers and hold questions and comments until the question and answer period at the end, which Daniel Pipes will moderate after the talk. Avigdor Lieberman, he was recently appointed Israel's Minister of Strategic Affairs and Deputy Prime Minister. He's a new face, a somewhat new face in Israel's political leadership, but he's someone many people around the world, around the Jewish world, around the political scene, want to get to know better. It is with particular pleasure that the Middle East Forum hosts him today. Let me tell you about Avigdor Lieberman. He founded and heads the Yisrael Beiteinu Party, which currently holds 11 out of the 120 seats in Israel's parliament, making it the fifth largest party with almost 10% of total seats. Polls show that he is the second most popular Israeli politician after Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's current prime minister, that was a Freudian, Daniel, Israel's current prime minister, Ehud Olmert, ranks only fifth in the popularity of Israeli politicians, and some would say after yesterday, maybe beyond that, maybe lower. Born in Moldova, Mr. Lieberman moved to Israel at the age of 21. He graduated from Hebrew U with a degree in international relations and Slavic studies. He worked in business. He was secretary of the Jerusalem branch of the Histadrut of Din Leumit, the National Workers Union, and he edited the Oman Yisraeli newspaper. As the director general of the Likud in the early 90s, which is where I met Mr. Lieberman, he rebuilt the party and restored its financial solvency. Then he went on to become director general of the prime minister's office after Likud won the 1996 general elections. He served as both minister of national infrastructure and transport. In these capacities, he passed legislation on natural gas, desalinization programs, and he worked towards the privatization of El Al, the ports, and developed Israel's railroad system. You may know some of Mr. Lieberman's individual views that he's expressed quite recently, that Israeli Arabs be required to take a loyalty oath, that disloyal is Arab parliamentary members in the Israeli Knesset be dealt with, that Israel borders be redrawn to exclude much of its Arab population in exchange for Israeli towns on the West Bank. But you probably don't know yet his vision for Israel, and that's the subject that we've asked him to address today. Please join me in welcoming Avigdor Lieberman.
Good afternoon. Thank you for introduction. I will try to start and explain some of my ideas. And I think that the first thing that everybody knows that Israel political map is very divided. We have the left wing and the mainstream and right wing and the religious and the secular and the orthodox. But everybody recognizes that so-called peace process, or I call it Oslo process, is a deadlock. And the first question, why this process after 13 years and $10 billion that we in the world invest in this process, why we failure? And the failure of this process is really important for understanding whole process, not only in the Middle East but around the world. I think that I will offer you my reasoning for this really deadlock, and I think that the Oslo process based on three big misconceptions. The first misconception is that Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a main reason for instability in the Middle East, that it's heart of our crisis in the Middle East. I saw that even in the United States somebody sees the linkage between the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the Iraqi problems. I think that this really affects differently others. Because, for example, I can take I think that the conflicts, the tensions within Muslim community, within Muslim world, Arabic world, it's 95-98% of all problems of the Middle East. For example, if I take the Iran-Iraq war, more than 1 million people were killed in the Iran-Iraq war. The first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, the civil war in Lebanon, the civil war in Yemen, Tunisia, Algiers, etc. I think that Israel-Palestinian conflict is even not a 2% of all casualties in the Middle East from the establishing of the state of Israel from 48 until today. And we must understand that for the Arab leaders, it's only an excuse to incite the crowd against Israel and to explain their problems and their corruptions and their internal tensions. The second misconception is that a conflict is about a territory, about settlement, settlers, occupation. In Arabic I say it's pistimisis. It's really nonsense. Because it's really a dispute about our values, about our vision. It's a part of worldwide collision between two civilizations, between the West, between the free world and the radical Islamic world. Israel represented the free world from the one side, and the Palestinian Authority, Hamas, they represented the Islamic radical world. Because why say it? Because you can see what is the connection, what is the linkage between the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and 11 September in New York, the terror attacks in London, in Madrid, in Bali Island, and the list go on. Also, when we speak about the values, I don't know any spiritual, political leader in the Arab world who could condemn, for example, the death sentence against Salman Rushdie. And Salman Rushdie continue living hiding between London and Paris until today. Or, for example, I don't know any political leader in the Arab world who condemns the destruction of the Buddha sculptures in Afghanistan. Also, when we speak about the human rights and the women in the Saudi Arabia, why it's impossible to build a church? I don't speak about synagogue, even a church in the Saudi Arabia. It's really dispute about values, not about the territory. I'm sure that you remember that until 67, all these territories, Judea, Samaria, and Gaza Strip, were held by Arabic countries, Egypt and Jordan, and nobody spoke in this time about self-determination, the Palestinian rights. Nobody established any Palestinian country, even non-Palestinian authority. In this case, it's clear that it's disputed not about territory. And the principle, you know, peace and land, peace instead land, it doesn't work. The third misconception, it's more controversial, and I think also it's very important to understand the conflict include not only the Arabs in Judea, Samaria, in Gaza Strip, but Israel Arabs also. It's the main point, because what we see in the end of the 20th century, the beginning of 21st century, is phenomenon of minorities. Every place around the world where you have two nations, two religions, two languages, you have a friction and you have a conflict. For example, even Quebec area in Canada, there is a conflict, there is a friction. Or take, for example, Northern Ireland, the same Irish people, one of them Catholics, the other Protestants. It's a conflict for 600 years. Or the former Yugoslavia, or Caucasus area in Russia. It's clear that we have really a phenomenon of minorities, and the best solution, as we see in the Balkans, it's separation between two nations. The best model that I can see for our region is Cyprus. In Cyprus, before 1974, they were lived together, Greeks and Turks. After, it was the same, friction, terror, bloodshed, war. After the 1974, it was a separation. They concentrated all Turks population on one part of the island, all Greek population on the other side of the island. We don't see until today any peace agreement, but there are stability, security, and prosperity. And only today they start to negotiate the negotiations about some kind of peace agreement. The same we must see in our region. My proposal is an exchange territory with population. My biggest dispute with Eric Sharon before disengagement plan was that I said to Arik, see what you go to create. You will establish the Palestinian homogeneous state without any Jews, and we will become a binational state with 20% of Arab population within Israel. The linkage that will be between the Arab population within Israel and the future Palestinian state, it will destroy us. It's impossible. If Palestinians, if they have a right for their country, also we have a right for our country. What is your logic to create 1.5 country for the one people and 1.5 country for the Jewish people? It cannot work. My proposal is really the exchanging of territory and population, and it's a part of solution, because we can to exchange some territory triangle, what we say triangle, it's a territory between Israel and Palestinian Authority with dense Arabic population in Umm al-Fahm area, but also we have the Arab population within Yafo, Tel Aviv, and Lod, and Ramle. And the other question, what can we do, how can we deal with the Arab population within Israel? I think that the second part of my plan, it's a new legislation, new definition, what is a citizen of Israel. And I think that we as a Jewish people, we have the right to demand loyalty from all our citizens. It's not a question of your religion or nation, but it's a question of loyalty. Every country that we have Jewish community, United States, Russia, Argentina, Morocco, the Jewish community loyal to this country. And we're celebrating the Independence Day of the United States and of Russia and England, and we're serving the army. Even in, during the First World War, the Jewish people fought, one of them from one side with the Germany and Austro-Hungary, and the other Jewish people on the side of France, Russia, and England. And loyalty is key to the problem. Also, I remember as a student in the Jerusalem University, the argument between Jewish students from Argentina and from England during the Falkland War at a dispute in Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And I think that it's really it's part of your vision, what is the loyalty and what is the citizenship. And my proposal was everybody must sign some declaration of loyalty to country and your commitment to serve in army or alternative service, and to understand that Israel is a Jewish country, in loyalty to the flag, to the anthem, and everybody who sign on this declaration, he can be a citizen. And it's really we open for anybody. Also, we have some problem with the Jewish Orthodox community. I think that Naturei Karta, for example, who to take a part even today in some conference in Tehran about Holocaust, and they deny our right for our country and the Zionism, they cannot be citizens of Israel. And this is very important part of this plan. One more point, it's very important to understand. It's impossible to impose any political plan, any political solution before achieving two main issues, two main problems for Israelis and Palestinians. What is the main issue for Israelis? It's security. What is the main issue for Palestinians? It's economy. Any attempt to impose political plan before achieving security and economy really destined to failure. It's impossible, and what try Shimon Peres for the last 13, 14 years to bring political solution before we have security and economy. Any comprehensive global solution must based on really knowledge of these three misconceptions and this principle of security and prosperity before political solution. What we can do today in according to the Palestinian problem? First of all, also today we see a big fight in the Palestinian society. Yesterday, three childs of one officer were killed in Gaza Strip, and we see really the fight between more moderate and people and extremic Hamas people, more moderate and secular part of Palestinian society with Hamas. And first of all, we must pick right partners. I don't think that Abu Mazen is the right partner. I think that he is the biggest obstacle. I know very good the political map in Palestinian Authority. I think there are new people, there is a new generation, the people who grew up in the Europe and United States, that educated in universities in Europe and United States, they're ready to fight Hamas, and their biggest obstacle is Abu Mazen. Abu Mazen, he excellent for declarations, but when he must deliver the goods, he is incompetent. It's our experience for the last 3-4 years with Abu Mazen. I think that we must work with new generation and give them a chance, because also they, the Palestinians, the left, the Arabs, they know very well if explode the disputes in our society, and I don't understand why we don't use the disputes and disagreements in their society. And today I think it's more that it's a fight between Israelis and Palestinians, it's a fight between, as I said before, between two civilizations, two approaches to the future world. And we have, even in between Arabic countries or Muslim countries, we have really excess of evil, that with Iran it's the main link, also Syria, Hezbollah, Hamas, and from the other side, from the other hand, we have Egypt, Jordan, maybe Saudi Arabia, we have some part of Palestinian society, and we must use this situation, we must deal with this situation. The first step, we must understand that any agreement, any commitments in Judea and Samaria, we must coordinate with the Jordanian kingdom, and Gaza Strip with the Egyptians. The second, to strengthen this new generation. And the third, we can start immediately with many economical projects that we have mutual interest without any connection with even with Palestinians. As the state of Israel, we have many projects, especially in the water resources, treatment of wastewater, sewage water, because we cannot divide the ravine and we cannot divide our water resources. We share the same water resources, and there are many projects that we can start immediately and provide thousands of jobs for Palestinians. It's better way than foreign aid. I said before our meeting to somebody, because what we know today, what is the foreign aid from the rich countries to the poor countries? You take money from the poor people of rich country and give it to the rich people in the poor country. And it's exactly our experience with the Palestinians in the last 10 years. The better way to start some mutual projects. It's this according to the Palestinian problem, and the last conclusion, our biggest problem is Jews, not Arabs. And all our problems, it's only in context with our Jewish people. And more important thing was when I speak with the Arabs, they ask me very one simple question, and I feel very bad. What they say? Every ally in the Muslim world was killed. We cannot trust you. Take for example the Abdullah, the King Abdullah. The big the grandfather of King Abdullah of Jordan was killed. Anwar Sadat was killed. Bashir Jumail was killed. Issam Sartawi was killed. The destiny of the army of the South Lebanon, we know. The destiny of the people who support us in Judea, Samaria, before the agreement, we know. What do you expect from us? And really, it's a very serious question for us, for our country. Iranian problem. I cannot speak a lot about Iran, but everybody must understand that Iran is not our problem. As I said, we have a clash between two civilizations. It's a problem of whole world. And if non-rational players will allow to achieve nuclear power, what will happen? First of all, it's the biggest nuclear arms race in all our area, and it's the result can be very unpredictable. What everybody must understand that it's really Ahmadinejad, it's not a rational player. Any attempt to pacify him, it's like before the Second World War in Europe, when Chamberlain and Daladier, they tried to pacify Hitler. They sacrificed Czechoslovakia, they signed in Munich Agreement, and it was Molotov-Ribbentrop Agreement. But the result was that everybody paid very high price. We really are part of the worldwide clash, and we have really a bad Jewish mazal. We have very bad location. We on the front line. We really on the front line of this collision. And I think so far it's very clear the situation. For left and for right, I think that even by United States, people understand more, especially in the even the Democratic wing, the Republicans, the administration, everybody understands that the situation is very bad. There are some guys who write some report and not sure that they understand what is the problem. But the most of the people, yes, understand what is the problem. We have problem with the Europeans, with the Russian, with the China, and we try to explain that it really the tendencies, the tendency is very, very bad. Today, Ahmadinejad more strong and more dangerous than he was 2 years before, and tomorrow he will be more stronger, more harder to stop than even today. And the non-rational players, it's really dangerous for our world. For example, what you can offer to Bin Laden that he will stop his terrorist activity? Nothing. Not piece of land, not money, not any agreement. His goal is very clear. He wants to convert all the world to be Muslims, and the reaction of the Muslim world to the cartoon of Muhammad, about Muhammad, and to the Pope speech, it's very, very clear. And I think that stop, even today, we can stop more easy, and it's more better try to stop the Iranians today than tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister Lieberman, for the all-inclusive report. And I would like, we have about 20 minutes to ask you questions. I'd like to start with two specific ones. First, what happens to a current citizen of Israel who decides not to sign the loyalty oath? And secondly, what you said about Iran is that it's not Israel's business. Would seem to be different from what the Prime Minister and the Deputy Defense Minister of Israel have recently said, which has been somewhat threatening, that Israel have to take the steps that it has to take. Are you disagreeing with them? Are you just giving a general approach? Can you be a little more specific about Israel's role vis-a-vis Iran?
People, about our citizens who are not ready to sign any declaration, they will continue to be a permanent residence of Israel. They can work, they can receive social benefits and study in Israel and receive the medical treatment, but they cannot vote and they cannot to be elected. They be really a permanent residence. We have some kind of this arrangement in the East Jerusalem. There is the Arabic population of East Jerusalem. They have Israeli ID. They can vote to the Jerusalem municipality elections, but they cannot vote in the general elections. They can receive the welfare and the stipend from the National Insurance Institute, etc. From the Iranian issue, first of all, you know, it's always the Jews, they will be the first and they will pay the biggest price, the heaviest price, if it really will be in conflict. And we understand this. But we understand also that the other world, the same, will pay a very heavy price. We try to prepare ourselves. It's the reason why I joined this government after the Lebanon war. Only in one reason. To prepare our country better according to Iranian case. because it's really from the Second World War, it's the biggest threat to our existence. It's not only tactical, it's not terrorist activity, it's the biggest threat for our existence. It's the biggest challenge for people, for Jewish people, for people of Israel, and everybody who see today the Holocaust conference. It's a sort of indication of what we can expect from this guy. And I cannot to say more, but we really do everything to be ready for any future.
We'll start with members of the press. Any members of the press like to ask questions?
George Baumgarten, UN correspondent for Jewish newspapers. You mentioned in particular that things will be more possible when the new generation takes over in the Palestinian community. Given that, as I see it, the unique institution in the Islamic world and the Arab Middle East is the Republic of dubious, what I call the Republic of dubious sovereignty, witness Lebanon, witness Palestinian authorities. Do you envision, therefore, that a government of the newer generation will be a more sovereign government that really depends on the type of loyalty, has the loyalty of its people, or do you not recognize that there still would be problems?
You know, first of all, for sure it will be a problem. It's not easy from nothing, from the scratch, to start with new government, with new generation. It's a process. It's not something that can happen immediately. But it really, you know, the key to the problem is to choose to pick right partners. For example, I see what made Russians in the Chechnya. They really took very right partners, and today Chechnya is really quiet. They took a power in Chechnya, they gave a power to the right partners, the close cooperation, it's really a right partner, not something artificial. Also, even Afghanistan Karzai, I cannot say that he is the biggest leader and he has power, he is more powerful guy in Afghanistan, but from day to day he has more power and more power. And opposite in Iraq, you must find the right partners. I think that our possibility to pick right partners, in especially in Judea, Samaria, today it's more than even before. And we know the names, we know the people, but you know, in every area, in especially in every time of history, the most important thing is political will and your determination. Without political will, without determination, you cannot solve nothing.
Thank you.
Omar, the government that you are aligned with now seems to be very unpopular with the Israelis. Who do you think might be able
our biggest problem, I agree with you, that the government is very unpopular, and maybe today more than yesterday. But it's not a problem. What really our problem? In the last 11 years, we have 5 times elections. We had 10 foreign ministers in the 11 years, 9 ministers of treasure, and 7 ministers of defense. It's impossible to establish any policy in these conditions. It's very the instability the unstable political situation, it's really our strategic problem. You every 2 years, two years in 2 months, you go for elections. Elections, it's a period for 6 months when you can to create something. The part of my agreement with Ulmert, it's a new legislation about our political system. We must change our political system. I prefer the presidency like the United States. I am ready for some other kind of political system, but the stability must be more important element of any new legislation. Without stability, we cannot achieve nothing. We can't create nothing. We had Sharon and Netanyahu and Ehud Barak and today Ehud Olmert, but the result, the same result. My joining to government was in these reasons, because we had two alternatives: or topple the Olmert and go for the new elections, but the result will be more or less the same, or to prepare the country to new confrontation. And everybody understands that it will be a new confrontation. This unstable situation in all our region, what we see in Lebanon, in the Palestinian Authority, in Iraq, it can be every day, in Syria. And, what our main efforts today, really to prepare the country to the next confrontation, to change our political system. Only in this case you can establish some really stable government that can to provide some new policy, comprehensive policy, not only to fight for to survive every week and every month. Last two questions.
Last two.
Yeah. I think that I explained the last two questions about the Israeli Arabs within Israel. For me, it's not racism. It's really a question that tests its loyalty, not the nationality, not the religious. Every person who ready to sign on a declaration of loyalty, I think that he can be a citizen of our country. Everybody who not ready to sign will be a permanent resident. It doesn't matter if the Jew or Arab.
Well, that's what I'm asking, the permanent residency problem. If people are not loyal, actually
dead. Yeah, we have the same situation I explained in the Eastern Jerusalem. We have, I think, about 150,000 Israeli Arabs with Israeli ID, and they enjoy all our advantages of our society, but they cannot vote in general elections. They can vote only to Jerusalem municipality. And for the first question, what was the first question?
How would this election
it can be new elections and referendum and legislation and the combining of all this, but it's really the crucial decision for our society, for our future. If you want to keep Israel as a Jewish country, you must give answer for the question of Israeli Arabs. We cannot avoid it. It's a crucial question for character of the future Israel state. Thank you. The last question.
Do you still think that those politicians who focus on us should be shot? And if they are, what do you think American reaction would be?
I think that American reaction, I saw it, it was very good. For example, if you, I have some meetings with the American establishment. I think that everybody accept my approach. Because when I ask, can you imagine that during the war time, some member of American Congress or Senate go to the Toro Boro to Afghanistan for meeting with Bin Laden, support him openly, publicly, and he can come back and continue to be a member of the Senate or Congress, if it's possible. What we saw in Israel, it was exactly the same. During the war, the last war in Lebanon, the Israeli Arab members of Knesset flew to the Damascus for the meeting with Hezbollah, with the Syria, support him publicly, and they came back and continued to incite against Israel. It's really something crazy. It's only in Israel. If you remember, during the Falkland War, they kicked out from England even the some football players from Argentina back to Argentina. Only in Israel you can see. It's not a democratic, it's not democracy, it's a really anarchy, it's not democracy. Thank you very much and goodbye. Thank you.